that it's not, it really is a discussion. There's equal amounts. It's a very irritating book for that very reason, I think. But, like, they're all talking on completely, when you're reading it, it's easy to say, of course, you know, but they're all talking on completely
different levels.
And
different
they
levels.
Never ever come together.
Different levels.
And I mean, but it's easy when you're reading it. I mean, when you're sitting with the person, I mean, I hear that when we talk.
That shows that they are totally barren.
Totally barren.
Barren. So nothing that he could do to them could really start the germ. So it's absurd.
Swamiji, doesn't this happen at the instant you, and it's a very hard thing not to do, the instant you respect somebody else?
No, if I respect somebody else, I'm all open and ready. Come on.
No, respect, perhaps the wrong word. Don't you think somebody is superior to you then? Knows more than you.
Yes, please.
No, I think.
And therefore, the farm or the ground on which you are going to sow the seed lies below the sowing hand.
That sounds right, Swamiji.
Not sounds right. Therefore, I come to you. I want to receive it. Otherwise,
yeah, right.
I was reading the other book. This was the thought that occurred to me. All right, I understand that he was a fantastic man. He was God Almighty. He could perform millions of miracles. He could save lives. He could cure your headache and stomach ache and everything. What else you? He could appear in three places at the same time. All that is marvelous. What about me? Once another great God, incarnation of God, who is also a mighty miracle worker in India, had come to the ashram. And all the Swamis, even the senior Swamis, stood in a queue to have his darshan and to worship him and all that. I had my own work to do with Swamiji, so I didn't go. He spent about 5 or 6 days with us. And on the last day, he came into Swami Shivananda's cottage when I was also there. He looked at me and said, "You didn't come to see me there." Right. He was supposed to be someone who could read your thoughts from millions of miles away. And I looked straight into, I mean, he's our guest, the ashram guest, Swamiji's guest. And Swamiji was there sitting there right next to us. What should I tell him? I looked straight into his eyes and said something, sort of, what do you call it, grey lie, green lie. I looked at him and said, "There are so many people waiting to see you, so I didn't want to." He's quite happy. Right, I thought, my God, you are reader of thoughts. You wouldn't smile. Good. Then he took leave of Swamiji and went away. A few minutes later, I was there, I came back, we were doing some work. Swamiji looked at me and he said, "Oh, you don't seek a private interview with him?" And I said, "No, Swamiji." "Why?" I told Swamiji, "I was brought up in an atmosphere of miracle workers. In our villages, these people used to come quite regularly. I've told you the stories of people who could raise a mango tree in 1/15th of a second and make them a mango tree yield fruits the next moment. So it's good. But that I've seen, I'm not terribly worried about it. I'll tell you a funny story in a minute. But if someone shows me the next step on the path of my life, spiritual life. Next step. I don't want enlightenment. I don't want all that. Next step. What I must do next? I worship him. Create a statue for him and worship him. That's what I'm doing. Next step. That's what is needed. I suppose I'm selfish enough to see that. All right. There is a funny saying. It's fairly vulgar. In Tamil, it is in the form of an anecdote. Seems someone came to invite invite someone for a wedding. So and so is going to get married to so and so, so and so. Aren't we going? He is getting married, what is it to me? That's precisely what I feel. All right, he performs a marvelous miracle, but what is it to me?
I thought you, the other day you explained the meaning of the Upanishad, which is sitting near.
That's different. So, if that happens, I'll worship you. If by sitting near you, I get one inkling of what the next step is, I'll worship you. This miracle I have seen. I must have told the story to some of you at least. This happened in 1942, or early, yes, 42, beginning of 42, I think. I was working in Madras, and the city was nearly empty, except for the essential services, all of them had gone, because they're all expecting the Japanese to land any day. So, only the essential services, we were left. The family was not there. We were staying alone in the house, father and I. Father had gone. And I was getting ready to go to work. I had come out of the house, and there is this little gate there. I was walking towards it. Then there appeared a Baba. Beard and matted locks and almost bare body, the number of Rudraksha garlands around his neck and hair, ashes on his forehead and all over the body, and he had one of those peacock feather bundles. He stood next, holding the gate, looked at me, also looked at him. He was young, I mean, he was 21. You started working on such and such date. I told him, you're one of those, get out of here. You know the date, I know the time. You may pretend to know the date, I know the time. Get out of here. Everybody in Madras was worried about bombing and getting killed and all that. There's a great danger ahead of you. I told him, okay, I'm a bachelor, yeah? Not worried about your danger business. Get out.
That's probably why there is a danger.
Then he was completely bare bodied. He put that thing under his armpit. Shh! Pringa, hold your hand. Ashes pouring from the tip of his fingers. I took a little. You got God's grace. I told him, thank you very much. I also thought so. But danger, he said, the danger wouldn't go away unless some puja is done. You have got God's grace, so you will be safe. But the danger won't go away unless a puja is done. I looked at him, waited. What do you want me to do? Said, I'll do the puja on your behalf. It'll cost you 200 rupees. I told him, we'll hit you next moment. That is the danger. Go away. <stop. laughs> I said, one more moment you stand there, I'll hit you. Go away.
Oh, you are pretty fearsome, young
yeah. Then he said, no, please give me 20 rupees. Not 200, 20 rupees.
He turned into a beggar instantly.
20 rupees or 2 rupees, something he asked. I told him, all right. Put my hand in my pocket, something was there, give him. These people can go around, used to go around, I don't know now. South India, like beggars. They were really, literally beggars. Like that fellow in Delhi.
Mm.
He was only a beggar.
Yeah.
He showed a fantastic miracle, but he was a beggar. And there were also very respectable Brahmins who were also doing some magic miracle like this. Also had some miraculous powers. And they would collect a crowd merely to sell tooth powder, for instance. And if they were able to sell about 100 tooth powder packets, each one costing 2 cents, they were quite happy. They had shown fantastic miracles. So I'm not impressed by them. The thing is, you are a god and you are God Almighty and you've got miraculous powers and so on. But in a few days you will be gone, I'll be gone. What then? I told you one funny joke, the other joke is not so bad. There is another saying in South India, in Tamil again. This is attributed to a very prosperous business community in South India called Chettiars. Now, before telling you the joke, I must introduce to the South Indian superstition. That is, if I come to you in order to talk about something auspicious, let's say marriage, I want to your son to marry my daughter. I want your son to marry my daughter. So I come to you with this proposition. I should not use one inauspicious word. For instance, I should not use the word sickness. I should not use the word death. I should not use the word poverty. I should not use any of these words. It should all be on the auspicious line, level. This is the superstition. And you should not sneeze, you should not cough and all that. Now, this Chettiar man, businessman, who has a daughter, goes to another man, another Chettiar, who has a son, and offers this proposition. I would very much like to give my daughter in marriage to your son. What about it? And they go on expounding their views and their terms. And then he says, what happens if your son dies? What happens to my daughter? The most inauspicious thing. But he says, I am practical. This thing is bound to happen. It might happen now. So, they say, Tali pecha arithi pecha. Yeah, we are going to celebrate the wedding of my daughter to your son, but let us first decide what happens if your son dies. So, it's extremely practical. I become your disciple, or I hear about your glories and about your miracles and so on. All that is marvelous, but what happens when you die? Or when we are separated? You are gone. What will I do? By merely thinking of all your miraculous powers, I wouldn't get anywhere. If anything, you would become more vicious. Because you think that my guru is going to save me miraculously, and so I behave foolishly. It doesn't work. So neither of these. On the one hand, you have this people like the other ones you met Krishnamurti's followers or disciples, whatever you wish to call them, who go on and on and on and on, the same thing.
It becomes such. For everybody's disciples.
Yes, sure, 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 sure.
Not
sure.
It
becomes
many people.
Quite. It becomes a sort of.
Who's in the central position? Mm-hmm. That's generally. Yeah.
No, no. It the thing is the same, but it takes on different shapes. In the case of these miracle people, they become devotees. They start worshipping him, God. He suddenly becomes God. In the case of people like Krishnamurti, it becomes a sort of status symbol.
Mm. So many people seem to choose a guru on his reputation.
Yes.
And how many...
His status
whether
symbol.
They can understand what he's trying to teach
them. It doesn't matter at all. Or, for instance, if it is a sort of Hatha Yoga man or something like that, you start a business around him. You organize seminars and classes and so on and so on, so that he is there and you make some business out of it. Either it is prestige, or money, or, which is the most dangerous thing, a sort of dependence, background dependence. Not dependence born out of wisdom. You can surrender yourself to the Guru. That's very good. But here it's a mere matter of leaning on the cushion, so that that holy man becomes a cushion. You lean against him. And you are quite sure he is going to protect you. Mm-hmm. There is, I know of one person at least in Madras, again. He was a very wealthy businessman, Sindhi, and he was also a great friend of this Omji, fat thing. And we don't know what happened. There was some kidney failure, that's all I could see, because his legs were also, he was in a bad shape. And he was lying at home. This incarnation of God used to visit the house very frequently, and because he was a wealthy man and he was a great patron, and they had built a special hall for him, special room for him, even to come and sit there for 10 minutes. Then they phoned him that so and so is seriously ill. The holy man wouldn't answer. Some secretary said he's not here, he's there, he's there. Then they sent a cable, then they sent a letter, then they sent a messenger, all sorts of things. And the man was in Madras. This holy man was also in Madras. Just about half an hour's drive away. Couldn't come. But some people were telling this family, why don't you take him to the hospital? And he said, no. Oh, he will make him all right. We have told him, he will make him all right. He died next day. When you know you have no support, if you have a headache, you suffer alone. 10 of us might come sit around you. It's only a nuisance. I would rather be left alone instead of having to tell the same story to 50 people. You know what happened? I don't want to say. Because the pain cannot be taken from you, shared by you. It's only, it's mine, exclusively mine, copyright. And so I have absolutely nobody, no helper in this world. None. None whatsoever. And if you have miraculous powers, they are of no use to me. Oh, you can produce a mango. And thank you very much, very nice. Because mango is, I believe, out of stock and they are not coming into the market till the next week. But more than that, it's of no use. What is the danger here is that when I know that you can produce a mango, I forget to go shopping. I neglect to go shopping. I'm not so keen. Clinging. Mm-hmm.
And she said, and I said, well, you know, that's his. And she said, no, the guru can't leave. You know, once it's a, he can't.
That's a different story. The guru can't leave you if you have enshrined him in your heart.
Yeah.
That's different.
He can slip away.
Sure. The body. Physically, he's bound to go.
Yeah. But she was sort of feeling that there was some sort of conflict.
Bond. Mm. Your bond.
She has all the duties in her head. The guru is supposed to be if he's beside her.
Mm.
The disciples got the rights on the guru, and the guru's got to abide by those rights.
And then there was the story that you told us of the hunter who wasn't accepted as the disciple, but he learned anyway.
Yes.
And so I sort of remember that and how the guru had sent him away, and I don't want you in my disciple. So
that's it. Even in that book you can see some instances like that. The guru must do this. Disciple must be a disciple. 100% disciple.
Is that a system, sorry? Is that written down too? Is that a system? Is a disciple a system too? That one has to follow?
It doesn't matter. Whatever be the system. Swami Shivananda has written something about disciple, right? You see that. Muktananda has written said something about disciples. Name somebody else. Somebody else has written about disciples. Out of these, look at anything. And from there on, when you go to your guru, you tell yourself, I am your disciple. And from there on, be a disciple. Is it the disciple's job to tell the guru what to do? No. No. Why do you go to a teacher? To learn. To discipline yourself. These are the basic things of a disciple. To learn from him. To discipline myself. And if Baba Muktananda, as Baba Muktananda says, to grow into his likeness. Good. Now, let's say these three are basic. To learn from him, to be disciplined by him, and ultimately to grow into his likeness. These are the three basic constituents of a discipleship. Can I hold these 24 hours? Can I hold these in my mind throughout the day and night? And make sure that there is no deviation from this. That I am your disciple. Morning, afternoon, evening. And at no time I allow this ideal to leave my mind. I don't treat you as my secretary. I don't treat you as my boss. I'm not jealous of you. I don't hate you. I don't fear you. I'm only interested in these three. I want to learn from you. I want you to discipline me. And I want to grow into your image. There's no fear.
There's no fear?
Because then I'm afraid of you. I'm not your disciple. I want to be your disciple, not someone who is afraid of you. And fear is outside of these three. I want to learn from you. I want to be disciplined by you. I want to be disciplined by you. Why should I be afraid of you? And I want to grow into your image. How can I be afraid of you? When fear comes in, then I have lost my discipleship. I have become something else. Why does fear arise? I am doing something which you don't want me to do.
Or I'm wondering whether it is what you want me to do, since what I...
Okay, then I come and ask you. Then I come and ask, you are my guru. I want to be disciplined, I want to learn. So, you are telling me something. And I'm wondering if I have understood you correctly. I come to you, I ask you, is this what you want? Or, I do this in the way I, in the light of my understanding. This is what I used to do with Swamiji. I remember a very funny incident. This happened way back in 1946 or early 47. I had not yet graduated to answering correspondence and things like that. I was merely typing whatever he gave me in those days. Later he used to ask me to draft letters for him and draft messages for him and all that. And someone who was going to give a series of talks on the Upanishads had written to Swamiji asking for a message of blessings. This is the first message drafting work he gave me. Gave me, draft a message. Write something. I looked at it. And Swamiji had gone, and then I went to the library, picked up a few books on the Upanishads, and wrote what I thought was a brilliant essay. A message of about 10 pages. The next morning, Swamiji came to the office, I gave it to him. This is what I understood. You asked me to prepare a message to be read on this occasion. I prepared a message. The next morning, Swamiji came, sat down, picked it up, thumbed through it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it took him only about 3 minutes. He didn't read it, thumb through it. He's very good, very nice. Put it there. Write like this. One paragraph saying Upanishads are wonderful. One paragraph saying that the man who is going to give the talks on the Upanishads, he is a great, glorious man. Praise him to the skies. The third paragraph, wish him well.
Third paragraph?
Yes, sort of wish him well. I pray for you, for the success of your mission. That's all. He said, this is what you want, alright, I'll do it again. He sat down, typed another message, gave it to him in 15 minutes, he signed it and dispatched. So, you tell me something, I have understood it in a certain way. I'll do it exactly as I have understood it, give it to you. And when you point out, this is not what I want something else, I'm not offended. I'm not afraid of you, I'm not jealous of you, I'm not offended with you, nothing at all. This is what I'm here for. I'm here to be disciplined by you.
Discipline meaning?
Discipline meaning? Training. Training meaning? The mind is the awareness is directed towards something, the truth. No fear at all. Absolutely no fear, absolutely no jealousy, hate or dislike, nothing.
What, only with the Guru this is?
Only with the Guru, of course. Once you have learnt not to be afraid of him, not to be jealous of him, not to be, not to dislike him or not to rebel against him, and you experience the sweetness of this relationship, then you realize that these are the ingredients of sweetness in all relationship. Or a disciple is supposed to do in relation to the Guru. I learned how to behave in this relationship so that I feel constantly inspired by your presence, blissful in your presence, peaceful in your presence. And once I have learned this, I know how to be peaceful all the time. I know how to be blissful all the time. I know how to be inspired all the time. If in your company, in your presence, that is, when my heart is at rest and free of jealousy, hate and fear and all that, in your presence, all these are found in me. And I taste all those qualities. And the presence of those qualities gives me the experience of peace, bliss. I realize that, that's very nice. As long as there is the absence of hatred, jealousy, fear and all the rest of it, there will be peace, happiness, joy in the heart. That's what my Guru has taught me now. That's Upanishad, isn't it? I sit near the Guru and in relation to him, these qualities are absent in my heart. When these qualities are absent in my heart, the others are present. Now I have learned the relationship. These are the conditions for this. And if I reproduce those conditions everywhere in all my relationship, I am always peaceful, always blissful. Do we or do we not entertain fear or hate or jealousy sometimes? Yes, sure. And that is when we discover the difference. In the presence of my Guru, I am free of jealousy, hate, fear and all that. And there is bliss and peace. Then I come and see somebody else. I become jealous or I become fearful. And the peace is gone. The joy is gone. The happiness is gone. Now I am quite certain that one follows the other. Free.